Good morning. It's Monday, October 20th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what's driving escalating U.S. military action in South America? A family tragedy changes state law to better protect autistic kids. And the priceless jewels stolen from the world's most famous museum. But first, to Gaza, where the ceasefire had its first major test over the weekend, with both sides accusing the other of violations. On Sunday, Israeli forces carried out airstrikes in the southern part of Gaza in what they said was a response to an attack on its soldiers by Hamas fighters. Here's NPR's Rob Schmitz in Tel Aviv reporting to the network what an Israeli government source told him about the incident.
Hamas fighters attacked Israeli soldiers with an anti-tank missile and with gunfire. And according to this official, these fighters did so beyond the so-called yellow line, where the Israeli military is currently positioned in Gaza after pulling back its troops from parts of the territory as part of the ceasefire plan a week ago.
Two Israeli soldiers were killed, and Gaza health officials say dozens of Palestinians died in the territory on Sunday, some from Israeli airstrikes. Schmidt said that came as there are reports that Hamas has been carrying out deadly crackdowns against rival militias and clans in Gaza.
Now, for its part, Hamas's military wing denies that they engaged with Israeli forces, and a Hamas official said the group is still committed to the ceasefire agreement, and it's accused Israel of breaking it on several occasions in the past week. So we're getting kind of a finger pointing from both sides as to who broke the ceasefire first.
As part of the ceasefire deal, 600 aid trucks a day are supposed to enter the enclave. But last week, Israel cut that number in half after Hamas did not return the remains of all the dead hostages. The bodies of 16 remain unaccounted for. Hamas has said it's having difficulty finding some remains, but did hand over two additional bodies over the weekend. As tensions flare between the two sides, a delegation from the U.S. arrives in Israel this week, which includes Vice President J.D. Vance, Special Envoy to the Middle East Steve Witkoff, and Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who the White House has described as a key negotiator in the ceasefire deal. Robin Wright is a foreign policy analyst and expert in military dynamics in the Middle East. She told ABC News that the unresolved issues of the deal's second phase are now starting to become clear.
The big challenge really lies ahead, and that is giving both sides a sense that there is something else beyond the ceasefire.
Still to be resolved, what a transitional government looks like, who pays for reconstruction, and whether Hamas will give up power and disarm.
This is where we don't have the details of that. One of the problems with finding an alternative to Hamas is talking about technocratic Palestinians and others from the outside world that would be part of this board of peace, which would be chaired by President Trump. So, you know, these are big, big, big questions. And just how does Hamas give up power? And how do you create an alternative idea that will attract Palestinians and help stabilize politically the Gaza Strip?
Now to what's driving the escalating U.S. military action in South America. On Sunday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth confirmed that another strike against a vessel took place in the Caribbean on Friday. This is the seventh known attack of its kind since the beginning of September, and like the others, President Trump said they were targeting drug cartels. Dozens of people have now been killed, leading some U.S. lawmakers, Democrats, and a small number of Republicans to question the legality of the attacks. CNN reports that the Department of Justice has produced a classified legal opinion justifying the president's moves because the cartels pose a, quote, imminent threat to Americans. And the administration has linked vessels to various drug groups that they regard as terrorist actors. Recently, Hegseth compared a Colombian cartel to Al-Qaeda and said they would be hunted and killed in the same way. But CNN notes that historically, drug traffickers have been considered criminals with due process rights and have been arrested by the Coast Guard. Trump told reporters last week the Coast Guard had failed to curb the drug trade after 30 years of trying and suggested the administration would expand its operations.
We've almost totally stopped it by sea. Now we'll stop it by land. What's the next
But step? It never worked. It never worked when you did it in a very politically correct manner.
Most of the attacks have focused on boats near Venezuela, leading some to question whether the broader goal here is regime change. Gisela Salim Payer is an associate editor at The Atlantic and covers Venezuela. She told us that the administration was attempting to tie Venezuelan leadership directly to these boats. She said her reporting led her to think they probably contained drugs, but it was more questionable that they were holding large quantities of fentanyl, as Trump has claimed, or that they were obviously linked to a larger group, or Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro himself.
The experts I spoke with in Venezuela, they don't doubt that there's some drug trafficking happening in Venezuela, but there is no evidence that these people who have been arrested for this are part of a centralized drug operation.
In a declassified report released in April, U.S. intelligence community analysts determined the regime does not operate directly with the Tren de Aragua gang. The director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, later fired the officials who signed off on it. As these strikes continue, the U.S. continues to scale up its presence in Latin America. Thousands of U.S. troops have descended into the region, and a military base in Puerto Rico has reopened. Elliot Abrams was the U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela during Trump's first term and told CNN the military strategy here hints at larger goals than policing drugs.
The military presence in the Caribbean is too big for just hitting a few speedboats, though it is not big enough for an invasion of Venezuela. So what's in the middle? What's in the middle, I think, is a pressure campaign meant to rattle the Venezuelan military and maybe crack the regime and see if it will finally fall.
Senate Democrats, with the support of Republican Rand Paul, are now trying to block the U.S. from engaging in hostilities with Venezuela after Trump said he had authorized covert U.S. action in the country. The recent winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado, wouldn't criticize Trump for his operations and said it was Maduro who was waging war on his own citizens.
It is on Maduro to stop this war by moving out and facilitating a transition to democracy. We do need the help of other countries and the leadership of President Trump to stop this war.
Over the weekend, it was reported that Maduro has also ramped up military exercises, urged civilians to help defend the country, and their defense minister warned people to, quote, prepare for the worst. And now, as the national conversation around autism has brought attention to the kinds of resources, or lack thereof, some families have access to, reporting from the Washington Post highlights an issue that concerns many parents of young kids: wandering or eloping. That's the term used when someone with autism manages to slip away from a safe environment, often without anyone realizing right away. According to the National Autism Association, nearly half of children with autism are at risk of wandering. The Post tells one family's tragic story. Last October, Maryland parents Dominique and Tom McMahon heard their doorbell ring over and over. It was their neighbor, alerting them that she had just seen their 5-year-old son, Miles, barefoot outside. Miles was autistic and had not begun speaking yet. Here's Post reporter Jasmine Golden.
This was unfathomable for his parents because they had locked the house up. It had many bolts on the door. They couldn't really understand how he got out, but at the time, that wasn't really important. Dominique runs outside. They try to find Miles. This turns into a frantic 12-hour search.
It was after midnight when authorities found that Miles had drowned in a pond near his home. So far this year, at least 75 children with autism have eloped and died. Last year, that number was 82, the highest figure since the National Autism Association started tracking cases more than 20 years ago. Miles had managed to slip away from his preschool class more than 700 times, a number that his parents weren't aware of until the end of the school year, according to school records obtained by the Post.
Parents like the McMahons are really doing everything they can. The McMahons had locked up their house. They even built a backyard fence that had a tarp over it so that he couldn't climb it.
The McMahons had attempted to get Miles therapy for speech and social skills, but the pandemic made it hard to get in anywhere. He was on waiting lists for close to 2 years before he was diagnosed with autism in 2023.
The McMahons were always most worried about Miles's constant attempts to flee, and for the most part, it fell on them to figure it out.
They've told me they feel isolated. They feel alone. They have to learn not only how to be there for their child, but also how to address this very serious issue. So really, even with all the efforts, it almost feels like an uphill battle a lot for these parents.
In the year since Miles's death, the school system has introduced several changes, including training their teachers and staff and developing a plan to prevent students from wandering. Miles's story and the death of another young boy from Maryland triggered a new state law that requires schools to tell parents when their child flees, track the number of those instances, and have a plan to address it. His family is now advocating for a law to require fencing around bodies of water in residential areas to keep kids out. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. Millions gathered for a second wave of organized No Kings protests against President Trump over the weekend. Organizers said there were over 2,500 events planned for Saturday's mass demonstrations across the country, although a map from CNN showed large concentrations in states that Trump has targeted policies toward in recent months, including Illinois, California, and New York. ABC notes that the rallies were peaceful and that there had been no immediate reports of arrests. Speaking on Sunday, House Speaker Mike Johnson called it a Hate America rally. Former Republican Congressman George Santos is out of prison after President Trump commuted the disgraced lawmaker's sentence on Friday. Santos said his experience in prison was humbling and dehumanizing. In a Sunday interview on CNN, Santos said he now has a new mission in life.
I told this to the president that I'd love to be involved with prison reform, and not in a partisan way, in a real human ways, in a way that we affect it, that it helps society, it helps these individuals rebuild their lives, and we have a better system with less incarcerated people.
Santos served 84 days of a 7-year sentence in federal prison in New Jersey. He pleaded guilty to wire fraud and identity theft in 2024. He was elected to Congress in New York in 2022 and was ultimately expelled from the House by fellow lawmakers a little over a year later. And on Sunday, Parisians and tourists alike were shocked to learn that the Louvre Museum was closed because thieves had run away with some of the crown jewels. The BBC reports a group broke into the museum and within minutes had made off with priceless heirlooms. They entered through a balcony near the River Seine using mechanical ladders, then used power tools to cut through window panes. Security footage described by French officials showed the thieves then entered calmly and smashed display cases containing the jewelry. Items stolen included a royal sapphire necklace, a royal emerald necklace and matching earrings, as well as a crown worn by the wife of Napoleon III. France appears to be going through a museum security crisis. In September, the Natural History Museum in Paris lost $700,000 in gold, and robbers took $11 million worth of items from a French porcelain museum. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Vanity Fair profiles Jessica Buttafuoco, whose father Joey and his affair with a teenage girl in the 90s led to the attempted murder of her mother and a life of tabloid infamy. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.